Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour editorial review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the groupies when we come back. You know, the genocidal policy of Global 2000 and the New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, our liberties, and our property since Noah's flood. And now our national leaders have subscribed to a plan created by the Club of Rome, the United Nations, the Trilateral Commission, and a whole host and plethora of other lesser policy-making think tanks with a goal of reducing the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. That's correct. 90% is the target population reduction over the next 50 years. Now, let's not delude ourselves into believing that we're going to stop all of these mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians in their insane scheme to enslave the world and impose a worldwide tyranny, a new world order upon all of us. But we don't have to participate in our own demise. We don't have to help them. We don't have to finance them. And we don't have to stand helplessly by and do nothing either. That's why I contend that it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of Israel and stop following all of these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and survive this Global 2000, this New World Order nightmare. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, my subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. The groupies. People like to join groups and organizations. That's why they join churches. They join the Boy Scouts or the Cub Scouts, or they will join the Masonic Order or the Elks or the Lions or something else. People have a natural desire to belong so that they can be accepted in the group. Animals work that way. It's called the herd instinct. The herd instinct. There's an old adage that says, birds of a feather flock together. So you'll see blackbirds in a flock, or you'll see starlings in a flock, and robins fly in flocks. Deer will herd up. Elk will herd up. Cattle will herd up. Sheep herd up. And believe it or not, people, human beings, herd up. The herd instinct. The French are a herd of people. They all speak the same language, and they have certain characteristics that they all subscribe to. The Germans have a herd instinct, and it's the German herd, and the French herd, and the American herd, and the English herd, and the Swedes and the Norwegians. They all have this herd instinct. I guess it was created that way, probably out at the Tower of Babel. You know, you speak the same language. So you would naturally want to herd up with other people that spoke the same language or speak the same language that you do. Now, within the herd, we also break up into little herds. And you'll see people who belong to the Catholic Church, and they like to herd up with the fellow Catholics. And then you've got the Lutherans, and they want to herd up with fellow Lutherans and so on. That's the religious people. And then you've got the secular people, and they belong to certain trade organizations. You know, you may belong to the National Rifle Association because of your interest in guns or shooting or things like that. This herd instinct or this desire that we all have to join others seems to be pretty natural. I know that I belong to the class of 57, and so we have a class reunion every 5 years, you know, and if you belong to that group, you don't want to go to the class reunion of the class of 58 or the class of 56. I don't have anything in common with the class of 56 or 58. I have something in common with the class of 57. And you do also. And so it's fairly natural. It's fairly normal. But is the groupies really good for you? Should you belong to these groups and organizations? Or is there a downside to them? Well, let's take a look at a downside to a groupie. A letter was sent to Sheldon Emery back in 1985. In fact, it's dated January the 11th, 1985. I'm going to read you the letter. He received another letter on December the 31st, 1984. And then a second one just a few days later, December 31st, 84. And then, you know, a couple of weeks later, January 11th of 1985, he wrote a letter back to this guy who proposed a groupie meeting. And then Sheldon Emery was sharing that with me. I happened to be down in Arizona one time, down in Phoenix, Scottsdale, Arizona. And he said, let me tell you what I think of the groupies. And I was kind of new at that time, and I thought, well, yeah, tell me about the groupies there, Mr. Emery. Well, here's the letter he received. The letter he received said this. It said, for 20 years, I have spent much time, money, and effort learning everything I can about the Jewish menace, which has the world on the very edge of utter destruction and slavery. You and I do not need to learn anything more about this problem. However, it is high time that we all graduate from the school of learning and get down to the business of doing. This doing must be beyond any local effort. We must consider what shall be done on a national scale. This need not be a clandestine work, but preferably an open declared war on the Jewish tyranny from which we all suffer. And it must become a head-on collision with world Jewry. Gentlemen, I'm not willing to sit back any longer and let our circumstances deteriorate further. We all tend to do nothing overtly for fear that we might get into trouble. Let me remind you that the trouble we are now in is just short of barbed wire. The Jews are out to destroy our nation. Our real problem is that we do not believe they really intend to slaughter us by the millions. And you really know what the Jews did in every situation where they established their damnable communism. The very same thing is planned for our continent. All the Jews need to do is collapse the economy and order our government to declare martial law, and the pogroms then begin, with Kahl's-type SWAT teams killing every patriot in America. If we don't make a national effort to stop our destruction, then we're no better and no better off than those Americans that we condemn for refusing to know what is going on. Now, I've had recent contact with some Canadians, and they're far ahead of us in this kind of effort. Guess who blew up the nuclear warhead storage facility in Siberia, which recently caused President Reagan to make his Bomb Russia statement while testing a microphone? The Canadians are active, and please note the four persons being brought to trial in Toronto beginning in January. This is the result of their anti-Jew action in Canada. Now, I quote from the plot against the church, as in Russia, the countries of Europe where Bolshevism has gained control are also completely ruled by a Jewish minority. The latter always appears in the direction of the communist government with iron criminal and merciless hand, so as to attain the utter enslaving of the native citizens through an insignificant group of Jews. My Christian patriot friend, are we going to continue to sit on our hands in fear of an insignificant group of Jews? I'm addressing this letter to America's Christian leadership. Our God will work through us if we will assemble for the purpose of letting him work through us, and if you do not respond to this calling, to whom will our Father turn? Let this be the turning point in God's dealing with his Israel nation. We shall meet at Atlanta, Georgia, February 8, 9, and 10, 1985. The place will be announced to you upon your acceptance of this invitation. This will be a closed meeting. It is of a confidential nature. No one but myself will know that you are coming. Please respond as soon as possible. Working scripturally to take back America. Now, that's the letter that Sheldon Emery received. And in the process, he wrote the man back a letter. And in his letter, he said, here is another warning about getting patriot leaders together. A letter came to me the first week of January from a man in Vermont, a copy without his name is enclosed. Now, I just read you that letter. He sounds knowledgeable, he sounds Christian, he sounds patriotic. And in it, he said he was sending this letter to America's Christian leadership and invited the recipient to a meeting in Atlanta, Georgia on February 8th, 9th, and 10th, 1985. And he said this will be a closed meeting, and no one but myself will know that you're coming. Now, enclosed is a two-page letter written 1 year ago to Christian patriots warning them not to gather at a meeting proposed by another patriot named Walter White. Now, its arguments against White's meetings are valid against the meeting proposed by this other man. And I'm going to add this. Our enemies have now launched a national smear campaign against all Christian patriots. They have charged several people with detestable crimes such as murder, robbery, assault, and resisting arrest. And they have arrested several, killed a few, and then identified them as Christian patriots. And then they have written extensive newspaper articles trying to connect those individuals with other Christian patriots or other Christian patriotic groups. The articles are liberally sprinkled with the words neo-Nazi, racist, Jew haters, black haters, and so on. And their goal is to convince the majority of American people that there is a Christian patriot conspiracy to overthrow the government. Those which are convinced of that will then hate and fear and stay away from any Christian or Christian group that they hear who speak of patriotism or love of country. They will neutralize many people and make them afraid of speaking about patriotism, lest they too be branded as part of this horrible Christian patriot conspiracy. Now, do you remember their charge against Jesus? They charged that Jesus was against Caesar, against the government, and then they killed him, and the people were afraid to oppose them. The best thing that could happen for their side is to have some Christian patriot commit some violent and illegal act, and then trace that fellow directly to Christian patriot leaders or other groups. They could then say, see, they're all in this together. It's a criminal conspiracy. Now, if many patriot leaders were to meet as invited, then if any one or two persons at that meeting were to commit some illegal act shortly thereafter, it is almost certain that all who had attended that meeting would be arrested and charged with conspiracy in relation to that crime. And the ones who committed the illegal act could be agents of the government. It's called entrapment. And it works. And in that manner, they could then eliminate the leaders all at once. And the brainwashed public wouldn't know what had happened. After all, they were all at the meeting just before the crime was committed, weren't they? Would it work? You bet. A second and perhaps simpler way to destroy the patriot leadership would be to simply move in and arrest the whole group at the meeting, no matter what the charges, even if all spent their life savings in a year or two in prison. And if they were all found to be innocent by a jury, the leadership of the Christian patriots would have been destroyed. So read the arguments against Walter White when he proposed such a meeting, and then read about it. And don't go to any of these meetings where the invitor has written out and published such reasons for a meeting. The later publishing of that letter alone would be enough to provide the basis of a smear job, even if the inviter is innocent. The events which could follow could be disastrous. The enemies of Christians are cruel, and they're devious, and we need to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. That was the letter that Sheldon Emery wrote back in response. Years ago in the Bay Area, there was a group of anti-war people, you know, over in Berkeley. They were a small group, probably 30 or 40 people. And they would meet every week in their little meeting house or their group or their living rooms or wherever they were meeting. And the state came in and they planted two California highway patrolmen came in, and they came in with money, about $5,000. Now here's this little group of people, they're students and professors over at Berkeley. This is during the Vietnam War, and here comes these two highway patrolmen in there, see? And these two highway patrolmen have about $5,000, which back, you know, in 1965 to 70, you know, it's a lot of money. $5,000, you know. In today's dollars, that would be $10,000, $15,000, or $20,000. And so they made this one highway patrolman their treasurer. I mean, they put him right into as an officer of the little group. Well, after all, he brought in a bunch of money. I don't remember what they did with the other one there, but here's these two highway patrolmen in there. Now, these people are against the war. And President Nixon, I wanted to get after these people that were anti-war demonstrators, anti-war people, remember? So the objective here is to destroy these little groups. You know, irrespective of free speech and irrespective of rights and the Bill of Rights and constitutional protections. And so the two highway patrolmen, they get to know the people that are in there, and they picked on a couple of guys in there that were, I don't know if they were dumb or if they were impressionable or if they were young or whatever, but you know, they get these people off to the side and they talk to them. Well, they talk to these two young fellows, and they said, you know, we need to do something dramatic. We need to do something that really will catch the headlines in the San Francisco Examiner and the Chronicle, you know, and the Oakland Tribune. Let's get some dynamite and let's set off a bomb. Now, this is a clear case, you know, clear-cut case of entrapment. This is a crime being dreamed up by government agents to see if these two guys, you know, they probably talked to a lot of people in the group and they said, hell no, we won't go along with that. That's violent. We don't want to do that. But they found two guys in there, just two. That's all it takes, just a couple guys in the group. And they said, well, God, that's a hell of a good idea. Now, where would we set this off? And so they got some dynamite and they set off a bomb on the mud flats along Highway 17, the Nimitz Freeway, out in the mud flats of San Francisco Bay. Didn't kill anybody, didn't hurt anybody, didn't destroy anything. Just a big bomb goes off, boom, out on the mud flats. And right away, the government comes in, and they go right straight to these two guys, or one of these two guys' houses, and guess what they found in his garage? Gee, they found dynamite in his garage. Now, how did the police know to go to this guy's garage? Out of the thousands of garages in Berkeley, California, how did the police know the next day or two to go to this guy's garage? Well, because the two undercover agents are in the group. Now, here's a crime that is thought up by the police. I don't know where the dynamite came from. I don't remember the article saying that, but more than likely the police agents, the undercover agents, steered these two guys onto it. Now, did these two guys commit a criminal act? Yes, they did. And was it bad? Yes, it was. But hey, listen, this crime was thought up in the minds of the police with the intent of destroying this group, and it did. Because, you see, now the two policemen, they say, well, here's the names and addresses of all the other members of the group, and so everybody in the group is now tarred and feathered with the same violent act, the conspiracy, as these two guys were. Now, that's what Sheldon Emery is pointing out to you, that when somebody invites you to commit a criminal act, you know, you ought to be on your toes. And that's precisely what this guy is inviting here. Now, Emory wrote a letter, a three-page letter, in which he described for his church members these kinds of events. And he took a historical event. Do you remember the Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba? See, the Cubans got the idea that they needed to join together. They needed to unite against Fidel Castro and overthrow the Castro regime. So they went to work on that project. Now, Sheldon Emory wrote a letter to Walter White. Now, Walter White was an old-timey patriot. I don't know what's ever happened to him, if he's dead or alive, but I got some letters from Walter White. And I remember he invited me to some of these meetings. And he put out a book. I think it was called The Duck Book, as I recall. And it was pretty humorous. It was pretty interesting. And he's probably a nice guy, and he probably meant well, and he probably wanted to save America. You know, it's kind of like religious people, you know. The religious people, they want to save you from going to hell, so they want you to join their church. Get saved. You know, get born again, or whatever it is that they're going to do. Well, secular people also, they've got a mission. They've got an evangelistic mission, and they're out here trying to save America. They're trying to save you from yourself. They're trying to save you from communist domination, or the New World Order, or from skull and bones. So they're going to save you. And then you got this same evangelistic zeal. It isn't that you're smart enough to save yourself. It's not that you're smart enough to figure out what's going on and take evasive action for yourself. No, you've got to join with them, and you've got to follow this program. See, there's this program that you've got to get involved with. So Sheldon Emory wrote this letter to Walter White, Western Front, Hollywood, California, back in January of 1984. And then he said, this is a warning against attempts to unite all patriots. This letter was sent to Walter White by Pastor Emory after three invitations from Walter White in 1983 to a score of patriot leaders requesting them to meet, organize, and present what Walter White called a united front. Now remember, this is aimed at the prejudices of various people. You know, it may be the prejudices of people against Jews or against blacks or against government or against communism or against bankers or against, you know, everybody's against something. Everybody's for something. Everybody's against something. And so they appeal to your prejudices. They want you to unite with us against communism or unite with us against Democrats or unite with us against liberals or, you know, whatever it is that's your hot button. He starts off and he says, Dear Mr. White, you still persist in your invitations to Christian Israel patriot leaders to unite, to work as a group for one goal. Now, this is my third letter to you, Walter, refusing to participate. And this letter will go into additional detail as to why patriots should refuse to unite patriots. And this will then be sent to my mailing list to instruct and to warn them. Walter, in communist countries, undercover government agents are used to trick dissident groups to unite under one head or to have them gather in one place or to publicly work for one goal. This is done so that the bravest and the most active anti-communists can be more easily identified, neutralized, and then destroyed by those in power. That's paragraph two. Now, that's precisely what was done by the California Highway Patrol against this little anti-war group of 38 people in Berkeley, California. They destroyed their group. They convicted these two guys of, blowing up a bomb or you know, whatever the crime was at the time. This is way before 9/11, way before the Patriot Act, you know. This is back in the Vietnam War era. And they convicted those guys, and they broke up this group, and they got a bunch of them fired as employees or professors at the university, and they succeeded in their goal. But I want to point out that this group didn't have any intent to blow up bombs or to engage in violent acts. Their intent was to bring attention to the war in Vietnam. They were opposed to the war in the same way that there are people today opposed to the war in Iraq. And we Americans used to tolerate people's opposing views. We didn't agree with them. You know, we might not agree with the Jehovah's Witnesses and their views concerning World War II or their Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, but we didn't send in undercover agents with the intentions of destroying their church or putting them in prison because of their religious or their sectarian views. Now, we do today. And you should be alert to the fact that when somebody comes to you and they make these suggestions to you, that there's probably a government agent involved. I got to tell you a little story. I was down, I had a student come up here from Corinth, Mississippi. I believe it's Corinth, Mississippi. And he went to a Patriot meeting. It was the Pilot Connection meeting. And in the Pilot Connection meeting were two agents of the State Tax Commission. And outside, there were other agents of the state of Mississippi taking down the license plate numbers of all of the people that were in the meeting. And then they corresponded to all of the people that were in the meeting and all of the people whose cars were parked outside so that they would then have the license numbers and they could follow these people around. It was a government sting operation using the pilot connection, a tax protest group. So when you're invited, you know, to some of these groups or some of these meetings and one thing and another, you should be alerted to the fact there are no public meetings that are not attended by government agents. And I'm going to repeat that. There are no public meetings that are not attended by government agents. I used to conduct public meetings for many, many years. And we always had government agents in there. And one time I had a school in which one very alert fellow who was in some kind of, I don't know, electronic communications and one thing and another. And he came in with a Pepsi-Cola can. And he handed it to me. And I thought he was handing me a Pepsi. And I took it and it was empty. And he said, "Do you know what this is?" And I looked at it and said, "Well, it looks like an empty Pepsi can." He said, "Look inside." And I looked down inside and I could see that there was something down inside. And I couldn't tell what it was because it was encased it wasn't styrofoam, but it was some kind of foam rubber. Whatever was in there was foam rubber. And so he took out his pocket knife and he cut the top out of it and he pulled it out. And here was a microphone inside of a Pepsi-Cola can, which had been sitting kind of innocuously on a windowsill just a few feet away from where the podium was located, where I was speaking, where I was conducting a school. And this fellow said to me that he was in the military, and because he was in the military, he was in spy, counter-spy, you know, and he was the black spy versus white spy in Mad Magazine. And he said he just thought he would walk around the room and see how many bugs or if there were any bugs in there. And he said, "I found this one sitting on the windowsill." He looked outside, and he said, "Do you see that white van out there in the parking lot?" And I said, yeah. And he said, "Well, that's the government van. In fact, these guys, these clowns, are so damn dumb, they've got U.S. government license plates on their van." And so I said, "Well, let me go look." And so we went out into the parking lot. And sure enough, we walked out to the van, and there was the van with U.S. government parking license plates on it. And he knocked on the door. It had side doors on it. And there was two guys inside the van, and they opened the van, and he handed them the microphone, and he said, "You left this up in the meeting room." Well, they were kind of embarrassed, and so they took the microphone, and they were very curt, and they got behind the wheel and drove off. They had been discovered. Not that there was anything per se that goes on in my schools that we wouldn't teach to the FBI or anybody else, but I'm just pointing out to you that was my personal experience. And in all of my public meetings and all of my public life, and I've been at this for 20 years, they've almost, if there was any public meeting that I ever conducted without a government agent present recording or tape recording or transmitting the events going on or taking license plate numbers, et cetera, or interviewing the people that had attended, I don't know of any. So I just thought I'd throw that out. Now, here's Sheldon Emery simply telling the people in his congregation, be alert to the fact that in the controversy over church-state division, you know, the separation of church and state, the government doesn't need to worry about the church. It isn't the church that's going to overthrow the government. It isn't any church or group of people that is going to overthrow the king or the bureaucracy. It's the king and the bureaucracy that are going to infiltrate, overthrow, and destroy the church. That's the objective. Can you point out, boys and girls, any examples where the church has overthrown the government? Now, can you think of any examples where the government has come in and destroyed or overthrown churches or church groups? I just want to pass that out. Now, Emery went on, he said, "I don't claim infallibility. Neither do I impugn the motives of those who disagree with me on this. However, men who have had experience in this, and in worse situations than ours, warn of being tricked into uniting, as it could lead to their destruction. It leads to disaster. Let me recount just one famous incident where the technique of unite them to destroy them was used with total success." But before we get into the total success story of unite them to destroy them, let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the internet. For more information, please go to our home, or go to our webpage. It's our home school site. And that's the Law Hour and Editorial Review at georgegordon.org. 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 Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by pre-arrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the webpage, and the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free four-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. And that's because most of the authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, or they're religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint is not necessarily 100% endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. And for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, talking about Sheldon Emery and the perfect unite them to destroy them. Remember the Bay of Pigs? Well, prior to the Bay of Pigs operation, anti-Castro Cubans inside of Cuba and inside of the United States were disrupting Castroism and communism, and they were actually inflicting grave damage to the communist Castro regime in Cuba. And because of that, communist agents speaking fluent Cuban Spanish were sent into the Cuban community in Florida, infiltrators from Cuba, into the Cuban community in Miami. And they were aided and abetted by our treasonous U.S. State Department, and they did so with the express purpose to organize Cubans into one great blow against Castro. This one great blow was to be an actual invasion of Cuba, accompanied by an internal uprising of the anti-Castro Cubans inside of Cuba. Now, disruptions of Castro by small groups were stopped for months inside of Cuba, while all of these Cuban patriots in the United States joined in to this one great effort to overthrow communism in the Western Hemisphere. So Cubans and Americans who attempted to warn these Cubans that they were being led into a trap by the United States government were totally ignored or actually forced out of Florida by U.S. government agents so that they could not warn the Cubans that they might be betrayed. Well, 18 months later, the U.S. Navy put hundreds of these Cuban patriots ashore in Cuba at what is now referred to as the infamous Bay of Pigs. Then they pulled out, and they left these Cuban patriots on the beaches without the promised Navy or air support. Then, immediately, the invasion forces were hit by fire from high ground inland, and as the Cuban patriots fired back, they found that their U.S.-supplied ammunition boxes that were marked 30 caliber actually had 50 caliber ammunition. And those boxes that were marked hand grenades had mortar rounds. And other boxes that were marked first aid supplies had food in them. And on the boxes, almost totally, were mismarked, mislabeled. So in the first firefights, machine gun crews died with open boxes of carbine ammunition. Men with carbines died trying to stuff 30-06 cartridges into their chambers, which were too small. 50 caliber machine gun crews were slaughtered surrounded by broken boxes containing sea rations. And mortar crews abandoned their mortars because their ammo boxes contained canned food. And it went on and on. Betrayed, wounded, and dying men had to break open all of the boxes under fire on the beach to get the right ammunition. These smashed and scattered boxes then prevented them from moving any large amount of supplies inland, ending any hope of any sustained combat or victory. Now, before this treachery was discovered, U.S. agents radioed the pre-planned signal for the Cuban patriots. They radioed these patriots who were inland to rise up and to begin acts of sabotage to help the invaders, which they did. Now, the invaders, realizing that they had been betrayed by the United States government, tried to warn the Cuban underground not to expose themselves. But they found that their radios had been sabotaged with dead batteries and missing parts. Or they were simply unable to operate on the assigned frequencies. They could send no warning, and Castro, who had been in on the whole plan with the United States from the beginning, then systematically killed and arrested all of the underground members within hours. The next event was told by survivors years later, when some of them were released or had escaped from Cuban prisons. Now, in spite of this deliberately mislabeled supplies, the invaders got some of the ammunition sorted out and soon began to kill some of Castro's soldiers, who were shooting at them from the high ground. Then, as they advanced inland past the bodies of Castro's men that they had killed or wounded, they discovered that they weren't men at all, but rather they were 11 and 12 and 13-year-old boys who were dressed in small Cuban soldiers' uniforms with guns with short stocks, so that at a distance, the invaders thought that they were shooting at grown men. Now, the sight of these dead little boys and the screams of the wounded ones crying for their mothers so sickened the invaders that they ceased firing. And after some confusion, they decided to attempt to go around the surviving little boys who were still shooting at them and then try to make their way into the hills. So they formed into small groups and they tried it. Now, once the invaders were broken up, Castro's regular troops, the full-grown men, who had been waiting a few miles inland, then hit them hard with artillery and tanks. Most of the invading Cubans were killed or captured that day or the next. A few of them made it inland only to find that Castro's police and soldiers had already killed or rounded up almost all of the Cuban patriots who had risen up at the treacherous call from communist agents inside the U.S. government. And in one fell swoop, the whole Cuban anti-communist movement, both inside and outside of Cuba, was viciously betrayed and destroyed. It worked like a shot. Now, boys and girls, the reason I bring this to your attention is because from time to time I have people, you know, that call me and they say that I ought to join this or I ought to join that and get involved in this or that. And I always remember this story from Sheldon Emery on the Bay of Pigs. I was a young fellow, you know, in 1960, and I remember reading about that in the newspapers, and I thought, well, boy, that was really ineffective. How come the United States got involved in a deal like that and we couldn't even go down there and whip a bunch of Cubans? Now, in 1898, you know, we did. Teddy Roosevelt went down there and threw the Spanish out of Cuba. But now, all of a sudden, you know, here's this Bay of Pigs fiasco. Remember, they called it a fiasco back in those days for you older guys. Well, the reason it was a fiasco was because those people were betrayed. They believed that if they would get involved in one great big movement, they wanted to participate in the groupies. People do that today. They want to join the Republican Party. They want to join the Democrats. They want to join this political party, which in reality doesn't solve your problem. You see, the powers that be control the political parties. Joining a political party isn't the solution to your political problems. Politics is your problem. Joining a political party isn't going to solve your problem. But maybe getting out of politics might. It's kind of a wild new idea, but, you know, mull it over a little bit. You know, if you've got diabetes, you know, the average guy would say, well, insulin is the solution to my problem. No. Insulin doesn't cure diabetes. And once you become insulin dependent, you will be insulin dependent for life. Once you join that group of diabetics, it isn't very likely that you're ever going to get over your diabetes. So you might think about, gee, I've got diabetes, so is the solution insulin or is the solution outside the box? Or as they say at Taco Bell, think outside the bun. Can you think outside the box? Now, I got to tell you a little story right here. There's a young fellow attending school here. And we'd gone through corporations and corporate capacity. And corporations are a part and parcel of this thing called the groupies. We like to get people to join these groups and organizations because if you belong to a group or organization, we can control you. If you're an individual working out here by yourself, you're a loose cannon on the deck. We don't like that at all. But if we can get you to join the Adventist Church or the Catholic Church or the Protestant Church or to join the National Rifle Association, excuse me, boys and girls, but let's suppose that you belong to the NRA, National Rifle Association. Do you believe for a minute that the United States government, through its various agencies like the FBI and, you know, the CIA and the National Defense Institute and so on, do you believe for a minute that they don't have your name and address? Did you think that your membership in the NRA is anonymous, is private? Boys and girls, these institutions and organizations that you belong to identify you as a gun owner. Did you really want the government to know that you own a gun? Was that really necessary? Was that wise? So I just decided that I didn't think that I needed to join the NRA and advertise to the world that I had a gun. I got a little sign over here. It says, these premises are guarded by a shotgun 3 days a week. You guess which days. You know, honest to God, I believe it would be better if the 200 million Americans in this country who own guns had never joined the NRA and never registered any of their guns, and whatever guns those 200 million Americans owned was a complete mystery to everybody in the whole world. And that way, the government could be guessing, well, which two out of three Americans have a gun? Today, they don't need to guess. They've got a list. They know every American who owns a gun. Well, say for 15 or 20. You know, the 15 or 20 that don't participate in the groupies. Now, he went on to say, Walter getting together was their undoing, and the betrayal and loss was so terrible and so effective that even anti-Castro Cubans who were not involved in the fiasco were made suspicious and afraid of all other Cubans. They would no longer trust each other, fearing betrayal, and no effective action against Fidel Castro has ever been mounted from that time to this. This joint U.S. Red Cuba Kennedy Castro operation to smash and destroy the anti-communist Cubans in the United States and in Cuba was a total success. The United States rulers are doing the same thing now in Central America. They are collecting the bravest anti-communists in each country to fight the communists. Then, after some controlled resistance, they too will be betrayed, abandoned, and destroyed, just as were those brave Cubans and more recently the anti-communist Vietnamese and the Laotians. This same type of false resistance to communism and then betrayal has been used successfully by the communists and their secret allies in the U.S. government for more than 40 years. And by the way, it's all explained in George Orwell's book, 1984. Now, do the Antichrists want to stop the Patriots? And will secret Reds try a Bay of Pigs type operation on the right wing in America? Well, they may try. But it's only going to work if Patriot leaders fall for the idea that we need to organize into one big group or for one united goal. You know, if hundreds of little groups and individuals stay apart and separate, the enemy will have to destroy each person, each individual, each little group separately, one at a time. That takes a long time, Walter. And even as some of them are destroyed, the necessary prolonged and public attack on patriotic groups will slowly and then more swiftly alert and awaken and educate our sleeping people to the internal red danger. Our communist enemies know that, and they fear it. And they will try togetherness as the ruse to attract patriot leaders. But will those patriot leaders fall for it? Well, I hope they won't. So that's why Sheldon Emery wrote the letter to Walter White and said, well, now, Walt, you know, why don't you go do your thing in life? And I'll do my thing in life. I will educate my congregation. You know, if all of you preachers out there, just one congregation at a time, and you educate yourself, and then you start educating your congregation. And instead of educating and teaching those congregations the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, why don't you start by re-educating them to the 10 Commandments? I know it's a wild new concept, but think about it. Because the 10 Commandments are the exact opposite to the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And that's why our government is so adamant about driving the 10 Commandments and the Bible and morality and God out of our public schools. And then why don't you plant some seeds and suggest that these people re-evaluate sending their children to these communist schools to educate them in communist philosophy and educate them at home to their own values. You know, when I was a kid, the Mormon people educated their children in their Mormon schools to their Mormon values, to their Mormon theology. And then the Adventists did the same thing, and the various groups and organizations educated their children to their values, their morals. And while we didn't agree with the Mormons and we didn't agree with the Adventists, we were all agreed on the Ten Commandments. We were all agreed on obedience to God. We were all agreed that filth and perversion and sodomy and bestiality was wicked and evil. But you see, once the government got control of education, they bring all of the little Mormon kids and all of the little Advent kids and all of the little Catholic kids, and they bring them all into the same schoolroom, and they teach them communism, and they teach them immorality, and they teach them amorality, and they teach them an alternative lifestyle, and they teach them that the Ten Commandments are bad, wicked, terrible, and awful, and that the Ten Planks are good and righteous. And should we be surprised then that America has been converted to communism? And I'm not too surprised. Now, finally, I had a student in here one time. He was over in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and we were talking about this thing of corporations and corporate capacity and how these corporations are controlled by the state. And so he asked the deacon over there in his church, he said, well, could I get a copy of the Seventh-day Adventist corporate charter? And they wanted to know why, and they resisted. And so they threatened to throw him out of church and one thing and another. So he called here, and I said, why don't you go to the Secretary of State over in Oklahoma City and cost you $5, and you can get a copy of the charter. So he did. He got a copy of the church charter. And he found out that the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma was organized at the state level in Tulsa, and they had a church charter, and that each member of the church was an underwriter of the church debt in paragraph 18. They happened to have a $200,000 debt, and there was about 200 members in the congregation. So each member of the congregation held a percentage share of the total church debt of about $1,000 each. Now, here's the kicker. It was joint and several liability. Now, joint and several liability means that in the event of a default, the bank, the mortgage holder, the creditors, they don't have to go to the whole church. They can go to any one member of the church who may be a deep pockets member, like a doctor, for instance, and they can just take the whole $200,000 right out of that doctor's account. And this fellow asked me, he said, well, my God, the people, can they do that? Number one, he said, my God, do the people of the church know that? Of course the people of the church don't know that. The members of the church never read the church charter. They don't know what they're obligated to. People who join the National Rifle Association, they don't read the corporate charter of the National Rifle Association to find out what it is that they're obligating themselves to. Boys and girls, as a member of the Boy Scouts, there's an obligation under the charter. Corporations are creatures of the state. Corporations are created and they're regulated. They're controlled by the state. Now, do you want to be a member of a corporate church? I'm not here to tell you not to. You want to be a member of the National Rifle Association? If it turns you on, do it. But don't ever believe for a moment that you're not obligated to the terms and conditions of the charter, whether or not you've ever read it or knew anything about it. That membership card is what binds you to it under Hale versus Hinkle and Wickard versus Pilburn. So when Sheldon Emery wrote a letter to all of his members and passed it out to those of us that were interested, he did us a great public service. He alerted me. He said, George Gordon, you know, when you have a meeting, you need to understand you've got a couple of government agents in those meetings. When you sign an application to join this or that, when you sign your name at the bottom of something and you join some group or organization, you become a member of the groupies. Groupies are controlled by the state. If you want to be controlled and regulated, if you want to be identified, well, then join some group or organization. If you want any semblance of privacy or anonymity, then watch out for the groupies. All right, we're running out of time. I got to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.